Welcome to Not Artificially Sweetened, a weekly podcast where we reflect on all things diabetes. Your hosts are specialist physician Stan Landau and diabetes specialist nurse Michael Brown. We are passionate about using our talents to change lives for the better. Our mission is to build bridges of insight and understanding between people with diabetes and the health professionals that facilitate their care. Nothing is off the table here as we discuss real people, their real issues and stories, and together discover real answers to many vexing practical issues in diabetes and its management.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to episode 51 of Not Artificially Sweetened. Remember, you can listen to these free podcasts on Spotify, Pocket Cast, the Apple Podcasts, as well as Listen mobile audio app. Joining me in studio, as always, my friend and colleague, Michael Brown.
Hello, Stan. Hello, listeners. So glad to be back with you again. This episode is brought to you by the CDE Online Pharmacy and CDE MyWell Reduced Calorie Meal Replacement Shakes. As the weather grows colder in the slide to winter in the Southern Hemisphere, many people find their lifestyle patterns shift. We tend to reduce our physical activity as we venture out less, and we tend to eat more. Did you know that protein helps to increase satiety and it promotes more stable blood glucose values? This lessens cravings and it also helps to elevate our mood. With 22 grams of protein per serving, the CDE MyWell Reduced Calorie Meal Replacement products will leave you feeling satisfied. Check out the CDE MyWell range in the CDE Online Pharmacy at cdeonline.co.za/MyWell.
Michael, before we bring our studio guest on board this week, let me just share with you that often towards the end of the year, it's not uncommon for people we see in the clinic day to day to report tiredness and feeling run down, I suppose, from the grind of the year. But it's important just to reflect for a moment that feelings of fatigue are not always easy to write off. And I think we need to just reflect on this for a moment, because when I hear somebody make mention that they're tired and are unable to kind of do the things they were doing when I had seen them last time, I really sit up and consider that kind of an alert to consider what else needs to be done behind the scenes. Now, I recognize that marked fluctuations in blood glucose levels can certainly leave a person feeling drained and fatigued. But generally speaking, if glucose levels are within a reasonable range and you continue to feel tired, then for me, something else is going on. And for listeners out there and for practitioners who care for people with diabetes, a couple of things we shouldn't forget. We should always take a good history, particularly around sleep, and we're very big advocates of good sleep hygiene on this podcast, recognizing that poor sleep really leaves a person feeling what we now refer to as social jet lag for the next few days. We know obstructive sleep apnea is a common cause of ongoing fatigue,
for sure,
particularly in people who are otherwise well. And it's often the bed partner or people who share a house of this heavy snorer and person who stops breathing and can be heard down the passage that one mustn't ignore that. And then something we're seeing a lot more of in clinical practice today, and that's of heart failure. We often used to think that blocked coronary arteries were the only form of heart disease that occurred in people with diabetes. Those rates are actually going down surprisingly globally because of all of the efforts we've made with good blood pressure management and cholesterol lowering. But weakness of the heart muscle or heart failure can often show up just with tiredness. So if you are a person with diabetes and are not feeling as perky and optimal as you were, it's worth bringing that up because time and again, Michael, we get caught out, presume everything is related to simply blood glucose levels, and we're missing some very, very common clinical occurrences.
I agree 100%, Stan, and this is something we covered only a few weeks ago, that just because you have diabetes does not mean everything that you experience in terms of your health is actually related to diabetes. And we must never forget the wider gamut of medicine and of health. And there are many other causes for some symptoms you may be feeling. So please, listeners, be open with your practitioner if anything has changed. And that's often where I start in a consultation. How are things going? And then, has anything changed recently? No matter how small you think it is, just bring it up and it may be well worth it. And again, it's a great reminder to the health professionals listening out there to remember that diabetes is more than a relationship between a medicine and a blood glucose value. Great reminder, Stan.
We're delighted to introduce our studio guest for this week's session. She's a well-known medical colleague around the country and a long-time special interest in the management of diabetes. Also, in more recent times, and we're going to drill down into this, that she is an outspoken advocate for diabetes tech, especially the role of continuous blood glucose monitoring. So welcome, Claudine Lee, friend and colleague who is well qualified, has her undergraduate degree up here in the Vaal, as we used to say, and really has worked in and around South Africa in many different hats you've worn there. Claudine, you'll tell us a little bit about that later. You've worked in the North, you've worked in KZN, very wide field. And I want to just pause there to say that the diabetes field is so immense that you've come into the field having worked in obstetrics, ophthalmology and surgery, so you're really well positioned in that sense. Welcome to you, Claudine. It's great having you here. And we always dump our guests in the deep end by saying to them, how did you get into diabetes medicine?
Thank you, Stan. It's a huge honor to be on this podcast. How I got into diabetes medicine, probably the biggest thing that actually helped me, as you know, and I'm not sure if it's better these days at med school, but diabetes didn't get much airtime in my training. So when I became a doctor, so to speak, it was quite a frightening subject, never mind something like a DKA. And when I did my diploma in ophthalmology, for the very first time, diabetes actually made sense. So when I went on to go into general practice, I actually just almost naturally just fell into it because so many other doctors don't enjoy doing diabetes medicine for some strange reason. And I just seem to love doing it.
I think that's great to hear. I think that our Teaching and Learning Academy has really tried to foster the idea that caring for people with diabetes in a community setting means that effectively you're looking after well people. I hate to say it, that medical training in South Africa and around the world is really focused on the sick in hospital, and you get a very slanted view of the person who's coming in at the end for dialysis, an amputation, or is already blind. And it can leave a person with this nihilistic view that that actually is what represented chronic care. And it isn't that. It's a wonderful condition to be managing. Michael and I, between us, probably 50 years plus. Claudine, you've got a couple of years there under your belt as well. So yeah. You know, really nice to share that with us. Thank you.
What I noticed, Claudine, when we were conversing the other day through your practice mobile number, is that your WhatsApp image for that number is, wherever the art of medicine is loved, there is also a love of humanity. And I think that comes through very strongly in many aspects of your life, which we'll get to. But I certainly think that's something that does characterize people who tend to specialize in fields like chronic care and in diabetes, is that we are not technocrats who are looking after, as we said, a medicine and a blood glucose value. We look first at the human being as a whole person and trying to maintain the wholeness and the promise of that human life to gain the most it can. Maybe just your comments on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the exciting thing about diabetes is that every single patient is different. Every single person living with type 1, every single person living with type 2, or whichever type of diabetes they have, every single one has a different story. I think that's why I love it so much. For me, the first consult is at least an hour, and it's really about getting to know. You can't get to know someone in an hour, but really just drilling down into all the different things and actually figuring out their journey, because that's the only way I can actually help them, is if I can see, put it all together, very holistic type of medicine and working in a team. Because like you say, if you're just looking at a blood glucose value or you're just trying to run someone through in 15 minutes, there's no way you can actually enjoy diabetes medicine.
And I think that's a very good attribute in terms of people out there who have existing care provision for diabetes or perhaps are looking for enhanced care. What Claudine is saying here is that it takes time. If you are with a practitioner who's intent of filling those 15 minutes with only the latest medication, all you actually get is the doctor's voice and part of the narrative other than your own, then that attribute for me doesn't reflect the right home for your chronic care. And in essence, Claudine, you've embedded yourself right there, what I still regard as the Natal Midlands or the KZN Natal Midlands. How are you there? How did you land up there geographically after having qualified here up in the north?
So I grew up in Sedin. Did my undergraduate at Tuks, did internship in Johannesburg and then Comserve in Sabi. I firmly believed I would be a mission doctor somewhere in the middle of Africa. And I decided after doing Comserve that the scariest thing I'd done was give someone an anesthetic. So I thought I better learn how to give an anesthetic properly. So hence I landed at Edendale and I thought I'd just do 6 months of anesthesia and then I'd be up and running. I'd be hundreds to go into the middle of Africa, not realizing that. So I did the diploma and they had this wonderful sort of community at Edendale. Jenny King's policy was, if you were taught, then you will teach. And I just think it's also just a wonderful thing that's actually infused me. So then I stayed on to do my teaching bit, and then I stayed on another year. And well, anyway, I'm still here.
Wonderful.
I like that idea of the teaching concept. And in our previous podcast, when we took a series of Q&A with Lorena, one of the things that came through very strongly there is that a patient community and certainly expert patients can become teachers to others. They've had a sound lived experience. They're on top of their own diabetes management with their own supervision with their healthcare team. And that becomes a flourishing network almost in parallel with the healthcare givers. And I suppose as healthcare costs rise, we're beginning to see greater role of the pharmacist whose knowledge and care is provided really essentially at no cost each month. And we've spoken about that with the pharmacists, Imran and the like, who we've interviewed here. So again, a nice attribute that we're hearing there is that teaching and management of diabetes go hand in hand, as opposed to a conversation with just the transmission of knowledge. Michael, do you want to add to that? Because, you know, your passion, like mine, is teaching at the moment.
Yeah, as we said a couple of weeks ago, I think that teaching really helps you to learn. If you are teaching someone else about anything, you have to know your subject yourself. And in the teaching, you are actually, through your ears, through your eyes, through your actions, you are reinforcing the knowledge and maybe looking at it in slightly different ways. So I agree with that approach. For me personally, I view all the experiences that life has blessed me with almost as a treasure that I have a responsibility to pass on, to pay it forward, to light the flame for the next person carrying the baton. That's how I personally view it.
I think that's great. I mean, I recognize you as a solid mentor of mine over the years that I've been involved in diabetes care. And thank you for that.
Thank you, Stan.
Claudine, let me just go further with this. We have wonderful care available to some people with diabetes in our country, and we have a very great economic divide for care with others. In your own practice, what are some of the barriers you come up with on a daily basis that prevent you offering the best, if we can imagine what that might mean in inverted commas, the best diabetes care to everybody you see? What are those barriers looking like?
Definitely financial is huge. Mm. I was recently asked to see a little boy. The company flew this child out because the dad was battling to work, a little type 1 from Zambia. And in Zambia, they don't have access to analog insulins, never mind something like a CGM. And so he spent 2 weeks with us. For me, my heart's cry is actually the rest of Africa. There aren't things like analog insulins, and that we kind of almost see as normal-ish. You know, most of our medical aids do pay. But yeah, financial, probably most of our patients in a rural setting are also not on analog insulins. And whilst one can manage type 1 diabetes without analog, it's much harder. So financial is a very big problem, and access to care. Mm-hmm. Most rural people, even if they decide to come and see me, and even if I discount or don't charge them for the consult, they've still got to make at least 2 or 3 taxi journeys, and usually with someone else. So that's 2 people's taxi fares. You know, never mind then try on an ongoing basis to afford medicine that possibly could help them. And sometimes we think that medicine is cheap, but to them, it's actually really quite expensive. So that's a huge barrier.
There was information published a couple of years ago by the International Insulin Foundation, and the data went that if you were a young child diagnosed with type 1 diabetes in rural Africa, your life expectancy was around 7 months.
Yeah.
And I think that was Tanzanian data, Michael, if my memory serves me correct. But I mean, that's horrific. And this wasn't long ago. So literally, these young people are dying from lack of access. Listeners, if you want to share your experiences with some of the barriers that you encounter in the provision of diabetes, whether it be financial or lack of access to current technology, we're grateful to hear from you on our podcast at cdediabetes.co.za email address.
Audine, taking us into probably your main passion, I'd like to raise the subject of creativity in medicine. Now, when I was at Wits Medical School, they used to have an annual art exhibition and contest within the medical school. Alumni could participate. And something I noticed very early in my tenure at the medical school was that all the brightest boffins in medicine in Johannesburg seemed to participate in this art exhibition. And I noticed over the years that all the people who really were at the top of their game in healthcare had a great bent for something creative or artistic, whether that be sculpture, woodworking, leather making, painting, photography, music, appreciation of art, cooking, you know, something that brought out the higher levels of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And that, as I said, is a segue into what I see coming from you pretty much on a daily basis. Your LinkedIn profile is amazing. And I think I think I can rightfully say that you are probably South Africa's foremost authority, self-taught, on the issue of technology in diabetes, particularly continuous glucose monitoring, because the immense amount of effort you put into each post is obvious. But with each post, there is paired an artwork. And so I'd like you just to talk to our listeners about the importance of creativity in healthcare, how important it is, how it helps you to see the connections. So we know, for example, the ability to play piano is basically directly linked to mathematical ability. How does that work? And how does it work for you?
So I do think my brain works a little bit differently. They kept doing my IQ at junior school because they kept saying to my parents, she overperforms, you know, her IQ is too low. Like, what's happening here? So I think my brain works a little bit differently. And yeah, I think I do see things in color. And I've always studied with lots of crayons and colors. So it's probably the way my brain works that then reflects how I digest information. And I also do some work with, we've got a lot of beautiful, fantastic private schools. And often the girls will come into my room and they'll go, are you a doctor or are you an artist? So it's not really that I try to do art. But I'm not very good at art. But it's just the way I express myself, I think. Yeah, so it's a function of how my brain works. And I think sometimes it does talk, like pictures actually speak more than words.
Exactly. Yeah, as we said many times on the show, I think creativity holds the key to helping us to negotiate the challenges of our future. And that's why I wanted to pick it up, because amongst all the science you present, there's always a paired piece of art, a piece of creativity that helps one to reflect on the science.
Yeah.
And often if we have an image of what we are learning about, it helps to stick. If we can create a feeling, it helps the experience to stick.
Yeah.
And so on.
Yeah.
If you look at a glucose download in the, you know, setting of a clinical office, exactly what Claudine said, picture speaks more than words.
Mm.
Because when you are with somebody who has diabetes or their caregiving team simultaneously with you, and you look at these ups and downs, usually in these cases, we're talking about not great diabetes management. Drill down deeper and find out what's going on. You know, is there a sadness? Is there some economic disruption? Is somebody renovating their kitchen? I can't tell you how often I see that. And you kind of say, what happened in these 8 to 12 weeks? And they go, well, doc, you know, it should have only been 2 weeks, but the kitchen renovation took 12 weeks. We ate takeaways every day for 12 weeks. And there you go. That picture, that imagery is leading you onto the story. And it's a very nice analogy, because whilst it may not be art per se, it certainly is an image with a lot more meaning behind it. No judgment. And again, we hope, and Michael, you and I speak to this every podcast, when you present for your consultation, you shouldn't be left feeling judged as a result of the glucose profiles that are assessed.
Right.
Claudine, because we follow you on LinkedIn, and it really is fantastic stuff, one of the things that you have posted about are these kind of retreats that you offer. And you seem to have a very cozy, good, friendly relationship with the people who you provide care for with diabetes. I want to hear about these retreats, and I want to hear about your thoughts as doctors, as friends for patients. You know, when I trained back in the day, don't sit on the bed, don't hold hands, don't show emotion around the bed. You know, you've got to be the fellow in the white coat. And I say fellow because in those days, you know, 80% of my class were men. But tell me about the retreat and tell me about doctors as friends.
So I've been working with Franz Dietz for at least 10 years. And the concept of the retreats came about because her and I, for the last 10 years, have been trying to engage with diabetes in a way that's not just disjointed doctor appointments and that type of thing. And it started out as just a day or a morning where we would do talks, do a bit of exercise, eat a meal together, and realized quite quickly that we need a longer time. And so that's how it was actually our first weekend retreat about 2 months ago. And we held it up in the Midlands. And it was truly life-changing for the people who attended. We were hoping that it would be a true representation of South Africa, cross-cultural, you know, language, etc. And it was just a really almost sacred space, where we sat around a table and shared multiple meals, where everybody was free to pick what they wanted to eat, carb counted with a little bit of help. They were all wearing Libra sensors. But I think what came through is where the most learning took place was one-on-one with the actual retreatants, who were other people living with type 1 or type 2, their interactions with each other, the friendships that were born. And out of this, we've got a WhatsApp group that's still going. And even daily, they're learning from each other. Like I say, I want to say it's sacred, because there's so much mutual sharedness of what they experience on a daily basis. No judgment whatsoever. And just a learning, almost like a snowball effect of just learning more and learning more and sharing that learning and realizing that, yeah, sometimes we fail, but that's okay. You pick yourself up. And that was also a learning experience. And we can go on to having a great day of sugars. Yeah. And just little tips and tricks and little things. It is actually an ongoing experience managing diabetes.
Our late but great diabetes nurse specialist, Isaac Solani, always used to come back from these kids' camps and share with me how inspirational it was having been there, having heard firsthand from the lived experience of these young kids and early adolescents with type 1 diabetes and how transformative it was for him. His role changed many times over that weekend, starting off as the nurse specialist and sometimes having to play the role of the adoptive father for a weekend, first aid provider, chef from time to time, I'm told. And you know, now I'm talking about him with really a great fondness. He's passing all too early at age 53. But exactly as you're saying there, Claudine, these learnings are transformative.
Mm-hmm.
And the best learnings we know in an education setting are those that transform.
Yes.
And I think, you know, anybody driving down the N3 would be well pleased, Claudine, to take a detour off somewhere near Howick where you are and look for great diabetes care. I think you're really offering some cutting edge stuff. We're going to get into the CGM in just a moment, but these retreats sound absolutely inspirational. We haven't heard anything like this on our podcast, 51 odd shows down.
Yeah, I'd agree. Looking at those posts, as you say, it was, I think, an almost spiritual experience, a sacred place. You could feel the joy of the experience from the participants. And that brings me to something that's really troubling me currently. In all the literature, we are seeing a worldwide helter-skelter to artificial intelligence taking over healthcare. And I actually want to put it quite bluntly here. I think health professionals are actually the architects of their own future demise, because we are not spending the time that you are describing as the healer with our clients. And we are leaving it to machines to be able to do a better job than that we should be doing, but are not.
Yeah.
Your comments on that before we get to the love of the more practical technologies that you engage in.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. A machine will never, ever have intuition, no matter how much you program. It can be very, very clever, but you will never be able to program intuition. And without that very human experience, how can you ever actually understand your patient? It's never just a 1+1=2 scenario.
No.
The robot can do that, but the subtler emotions and intuition, like you say, time spent, you also can't solve any kind of problem or even begin to start walking a path with someone if you're not willing to spend the time.
Mm-hmm.
And a robot's time is very different to a human's time.
Claudine, we're going to get into your role as an activist or a promoter of activism in terms of CGM, but let's take a short break and hear from this week's SA Diabetes Advocacy message.
SA Diabetes Advocacy is completely volunteer-led and currently has no funding. We are so grateful for the incredible diabetes advocates in our community who continue to pursue their own passion projects, as well as work with us at SA Diabetes Advocacy on various projects to ensure that we are tackling some of the biggest issues that people living with diabetes are facing in South Africa. Over the next few months at SA Diabetes Advocacy, we'll be putting all our time, energy and focus into fundraising so that we can continue to grow as an organisation and create effective change for diabetes in South Africa. If you would like to keep informed on our projects and work, please follow us on our various social media channels, which you can find on our website at diabetesadvocacy.org.za.
Thank you very much, Kirsten. We look forward to your great messages each week, and we hope that it gives our listeners something to reflect on.
Claudine, hardly a day goes by on your LinkedIn posts where you haven't chided appropriately the South African medical aid funders for those in private practice, and why not government in that sense, for their sluggish, indifferent approach to the provision of continuous glucose monitoring. Why is this so important in general for diabetes, and why is it a particular bugbear of yours to call out these organizations appropriately so for their really laggard approach to CGM provision?
So it comes back to art and color again. If you're looking at SMBG, self-monitoring blood glucose, if you're just doing, for argument's sake, one sugar a day, or even if you manage to do six, it's like a very poor black and white fuzzy image. If you've got CGM, it's full color 3D. You can actually see what's going on. Particularly my bugbear is for people living with type 1 diabetes, particularly children, it is almost impossible to manage a condition like this without CGM. It really is an exercise in frustration to try and dose insulin using six readings a day, as opposed to a reading either every minute or a reading every 5 minutes.
Mm.
So it infuriates me because they use cost as an excuse. And whilst these devices are expensive, the problem is either if you lose the life Or if, like, I see a lot of teenagers even who are either already blind or already on dialysis, how much does that cost? I mean, I could go on for 7 days talking about this, but in a nutshell, yeah.
It's great. You can really sense the passion that's behind this. And really that, Michael, for me is another attribute of a really good practitioner, somebody who's not just doing the daily grind in that sense, but looking behind the scenes to make better care for everybody. That said, hundreds and thousands of people who've done well with finger prick testing over the years, it's great. We've interviewed people who've lived 50 plus 60 years with their type 1 diabetes. But I think as we pause for the modern day now, going into this millennium, we ought to be doing the best we can be. And hopefully some of these lower cost options will arrive on our shores shortly. There are some talks ahead that some of these lower cost options may be making their way here and perhaps make it a bit more equitable in terms of what will be available. But Claudine, let me just pause there for a moment and play the devil's advocate here. CGM is but one part of the diabetes jigsaw puzzle, and I don't want the listenership to have an expectation that only with good access to CGM can you do well.
Yeah.
What else makes for long-term good diabetes outcomes or healthy outcomes in the long term for people with diabetes?
Yeah, I fully agree with you. And I do have patients. In fact, some of them I've inherited from CDE in Houghton who retire to Howick.
I can think of a couple of late who've come down to that large retirement session.
Yeah, beautiful A1Cs, beautiful quality of life, and they have only ever used CMBGs. And some of them haven't even necessarily had access to the very fancy new analog insulins. So definitely, definitely without the shadow of a doubt, lifestyle, what you actually choose to eat, how you choose to exercise, how you choose to manage your stresses. Because I have some extremely intelligent people living with type 1 diabetes who are very high up in their career, and they actually do have a hybrid closed loop insulin pump with CGM and their A1C is 10. And a lot of that has to do with what they eat and the amount of stress that they live under. And so mitigating for that is, well, I often find it quite frustrating because I'm arguing for that to be mitigated, but I can't, there's nothing I can do. I've given them the best technology. Yeah.
You speak of stress. My kids are much older now. They're nearly 20. I remember when they were one, there was a place not far from where you are called the Duck and Deck. And in those days, it was a great trek when it rained in Durban to go up the hill to Butters Hill, I think it was. I went back with them a couple of years ago. Man, the place has been built up. So the stresses of the city seem as if they're getting closer to where you are in this kind of nice off the N3 highway, small village of Hilton and the like has really become part and parcel of the greater Durban metro, as it feels at this point. But I agree with you, stress plays an enormous role over the lifespan, whether it be related to disordered eating, the puberty, pregnancy, menopause, change of life, hospitalizations. Michael, we've spoken at great length in recent podcasts about all of those changes. But thanks for putting that into a nutshell there, Claudine. I agree with everything you've said.
Claudine, I'd just like to explore technology a little bit more, let's say, with insight, looking around it to see it from all perspectives. One sees that continuous glucose monitoring almost provides you with a high-definition video on a continuous basis of the blood glucose values. What are the factors that maybe can optimize the success of continuous glucose monitoring technologies? We all know the stories of those people on the first Libre series who never scan their sensor. So what are the things that optimize technologies like CGM? And what are things that maybe count against it?
I've always been very pro-technology, but I initially had patients on insulin pumps. And in those days, it was the Roche pump. And the CGM sort of came after. But if I had to choose one, either an insulin pump or a CGM, I feel like the patients get more benefit from a CGM than a pump. Mm-hmm. But when you put them together and when you put them together in hybrid closed loop, I mean,
absolutely, yeah.
You know, it really is. And I've got some patients who honestly run 90% time in range.
Oh, game changer.
And they live their life. These are people who do eat healthily and do exercise. But to get that level of time in range without a hybrid closed loop system is impossible. And in fact, one of those patients saw me the other day and he said when his sensor is warming up, even that 1 hour, he cannot control his sugar. Just that 1 hour. And that was like a serious eye opener to me because here's someone who he's intelligent. He's had diabetes for at least 20 years. He's doing everything he can. And just that 1 hour that his sensor is warming up, he feels his levels go haywire. So when you do put the two together with these fairly fancy algorithms now, it makes a huge difference. In a way, it's like a miracle for those patients because they can just live their lives. They're not having to remember. I don't know about you guys, but my patients who are the most poorly controlled are the ones who miss doses. And that becomes a habit. And if you're needing to remember your doses and you don't have a system, very few of them actually have a system, how do you remember it? Whereas when you're on hybrid closed loop, you're not having to remember. You can essentially do your normal life. Mm. Yeah.
We've said many times on this podcast series that these newer tools really enable better diabetes care to be achieved. There are plenty of people who are achieving good diabetes outcomes without this. Perhaps they're on, you know, small doses of oral medication, early onset type 2 diabetes, but the tricky management of diabetes, particularly when it comes to insulin, particularly in younger people, really ought to be managed for everybody, whether you're in the state care provision or you're in private practice. And again, SA Diabetes Advocacy Groups, people like you, Claudine, really pushing that hard agenda, yeah, appropriately so in our country.
Yeah. Not everyone can tightrope between the twin towers that used to stand in New York. I remember one chap did that in the 1970s, I think. And that's akin to doing it yourself with self-blood glucose monitoring. I think that most of us need a wider road to travel on. And these technologies really do help us to see more of the road ahead and to maintain a better balance with less stress.
Absolutely.
So Claudine, I think we haven't even scratched the surface of your passion, our passion, and all that you could share with our listeners. So I think I can see us inviting you back in the future. But let's start to wind up this episode with maybe a few tips from you, your pearls of wisdom from your many years of practice in diabetes and with diabetes-related technologies. What would you like our listeners, both people with diabetes and health professionals working in the field, what do you want them to know?
I think the first step is a history and a context of that patient. If we're talking in terms of they're coming and they haven't had great control, the very first step is understanding the context, understanding where they're coming from.
Right. Mm.
And what are the lenses with which they're looking at their diabetes? Because sometimes people will tell me stuff that's not even true. Like some people get told things like they're only allowed to eat white cheese, or some of these things are truly interesting, but they believe it. They really believe it. So if you can drill down to figuring out what biases, what strange lenses are they coming with, mm-hmm, then you can start to actually sort of clear the way and then try in a slow sort of stepwise fashion, educate them. For me, I always ask my patients, what do you eat? What do you have for breakfast, lunch, and supper? Because they all think that the good old South African breakfast of cereal and a glass of orange juice is fantastic, for some other reason. But yeah, drilling down to what they actually do put into their mouths, and not everybody can afford salmon. Yeah. And I'm not even saying salmon is the right thing to eat, but getting them to understand that, especially in a cost-constrained, economically tricky environment, it does boil down to what you put in your mouth. Sure. And the type of exercise you do. There are wonderful medicines we can use and they work well. But if you're willing to understand how the glucose molecule works, how it gets into the cell, the difference between a glucose molecule and a protein molecule and fat and all of that, which is actually accessible to patients to understand, you can actually help them get good sugar control in a cost-constrained environment. They don't always want to do it. So then there's also the psychological side, you know. I have a patient who says she wishes she could ban vegetables. She's quite angry.
Wow.
But she wants to eat other things. And, you know, for me, I love vegetables. I think vegetables are fantastic. They're tasty. I love eating vegetables. But some people think you've only got to eat vegetables. You've only got to boil them.
Oh, no, don't boil them. Yuck.
Exactly. Or you've got to eat them without salt. So from a very broad South African point of view, there are ways to get sugar control better by doing very simple little things.
I think something that came out from your closing remarks there is the story, the narrative,
yeah,
and also the lenses. And I think those are concepts that many healthcare providers, they're not even aware of. And I think that has helped you now to share your story, because our tagline for this podcast is real people, real stories, and real answers. And Claudine, I just want to thank you. I think you have, through your story, your narrative today, given us some great insights. And I hope it'll change lives and practice in the months and years ahead. So thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Stan.
I think if any listener out there is looking for care, it's half as good as what Claudine is offering at this point in time. You're in a good space. Mm. Claudine, you set the benchmark very, very high nationally. We're proud to have you associated with our organization for a number of years. And in general, really somebody who's hung around to offer great diabetes care, because as we recognize, it's not always easy care for health providers to maintain. You said in your early days, it wasn't a popular choice. We still recognize that a dearth of care and the abhorrent ongoing lack of recognition for diabetes nurse specialists in this particular field. So your advocacy roles are not gone unnoticed. It's a key reason we invited you onto the show. And I think Michael and I are immensely proud to have had you on board. And thank you again for coming along.
It's been a great pleasure and a great honor.
Listeners, thank you for joining us on this, our 51st episode. Here's a reminder that this episode was indeed brought to you by the CDE Online Pharmacy and the new range of the CDE MyWell Reduced Calorie Meal Replacement Shakes in three delectable flavors: strawberries and cream, Madagascan vanilla, and creamy chocolate. If shakes aren't always your cup of tea, check out the recipes incorporating these products on the CDE Online Pharmacy store under the MyWell tab. Try their custard and chocolate mousse recipes for when that sweet craving hits home. That's a wrap for me. We'll join you the next time with Not Artificially Sweetened.
Bye.
Over and out from us. Thank you for joining us on Not Artificially Sweetened, where we aim to build bridges of insight and understanding between people with diabetes and the health professionals that facilitate their care. Anything we discuss is for your reflection, education, personal growth, and entertainment only. You join this podcast at your own risk, and we are not responsible for any omissions, errors, or unwanted medical outcomes. Please note the following important, specific disclaimers. For people with diabetes, the health professionals on this podcast are not your personal caregivers. Always discuss any new information with your diabetes team before acting on any aspect of it. The views and opinions discussed are those of the hosts only and do not represent those of any other entity. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you encounter in this session. Anything you learn or experience here cannot substitute for personalized, professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. For health professionals working in diabetes, always discuss any new information with your clinical team before acting on any aspect of it. You are personally accountable and liable for any choices made in a clinical setting according to your level of training and legal scope of practice. Any information or insights gained here must be used with your professional discretion and with the developing base of clinical evidence, local and organizational laws, regulations, guidelines, and protocols. Good luck with your diabetes care missions. Till next time.